Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're joining us today, thank you for making us a part of your day. We have an exciting show today. We're going to talk about the markets. We're going to talk about some trust administration stuff, because in studio with me is Taylor Cattell of KG Law Group. Hello, Taylor.
Good morning, Bo. Good morning, everyone.
So if you have a question specifically about your trust administration planning, your estate planning, stuff that's going to happen after your death, now is the time to call 503-222-9700. It's 503-222-9700 and ask that question that's been keeping you up at night, especially with recent market headlines. I know it's on everybody's mind. We're looking up, you know, the TVs that are playing behind us right now, playing, you know, between, you know, CNN, Fox News, CNBC, all of them is coronavirus, coronavirus, mm-hmm. Corona. That's the big leading thing out there. And so if you have questions about that, if you're worried about that and what happens after you pass away, hopefully not from coronavirus.
Hopefully not.
But any other thing that happens, if you step off the side of the curb, make sure you give us a call and ask that question. Taylor's here to help and answer that question. We've had a few that have come in, Taylor, when Kevin and I were here, and we kind of go, this is what we know, wish somebody else was here, that sort of deal. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the markets as we start, because I know a lot of people have questions about it, and it's been kind of a crazy week.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy 2 weeks, really.
Yeah.
In the market since the coronavirus started the global shutdown. Last week, Taylor, I was telling people, I don't think this smacks of 2008. A lot of people have sort of that post-traumatic stress disorder, to borrow a phrase, you know, from something that's obviously much more serious. But they see when the market goes down like it did. And I had calls from clients that said, hey, I went through 2008. I don't want to play that game again.
Right.
That's specifically what one client said. He said, I don't want to play that game. And I explained to him, luckily for us, the strategies that we're using and the portfolios that we're using, we're not tracking exactly the market. I've talked about it ad nauseum. When you're looking at the headlines that the Dow is down 1,000 points, which is a big point move.
Right.
Or that the S&P is down, you know, 4% in a day, and any of those things, unless you're owning that specific index fund or a fund that tracks as best it can to that specific index, your investment portfolio is probably not down the same amount. Just like it wasn't up the same amount for the year end 2019 when the market was way up.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, the big key is, if you are losing sleep, if you are stressed out, if you are worried about what your 401k, your IRA, your investment portfolio is doing, call your advisor, talk to him. But if you're worried, there's a saying when we talk about investments that you should take only as much risk as you can handle. And the big thing is, because if you have a long-term philosophy, if you're not a trader, so the traders are the ones who are looking at those big intraday swings. They're saying, oh my God, the market's way up, we got to sell. The market's way down, we got to buy. And they're trying to do it intraday. I have not met a trader who's gotten it right all the time, and people will tell you how good they are at day trading, but they won't tell you about when they lost money. They only tell you about when they made money. But if you're an investor, if you are someone who is buying for the long term, if you are someone who's buying for a long term through retirement, whether that's you're in retirement, approaching retirement, or like us, you're still several years away, many years away from retirement, you have an opportunity right now, conceivably, to buy some good quality companies on a 40% sale in some places. So, you know, when we're talking about, you know, we're talking about, okay, so we need to go buy hand sanitizer, which apparently you can't find anywhere right now. But if I
Or toilet paper. I was hearing about the run on toilet paper.
Which is just crazy. But I guess if people are thinking they're going to have to quarantine themselves for 14 days, they got to make sure they can have an adequate supply of toilet paper.
Well, interesting side note, but I was hearing that it's not actually that people are running out of toilet paper. It's the fear that other people are going to be afraid of running out of toilet paper. So it's like a run on the bank. Same idea, except toilet paper.
Right. So, yeah, I'm afraid of that other people. Yeah, and we have. It's just an endless loop.
Here
right?
we are.
And then you see, I know I saw on Amazon, somebody was listing two small bottles of hand sanitizer for like $45 each, you know, which normally you can get at Safeway for like $2.95.
Right.
But which is kind of not funny, haha. But
right.
But when you're in that, when you know, to go back to when we're talking about the amount of risk that you're taking, you need to have a strategy that you can stick with long term. Because if you're a long term investor, your time horizon is not a month, it's not a week, it's not 2 weeks, it's not a year. It's 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Retirement lasts 20, 30 years for some people, depending on when you pull the trigger on retirement. And so if you're in a strategy, if you're in a risk bucket that you cannot handle, you cannot stomach going through, you probably have too much risk in your portfolio.
Mm.
And a lot of people don't really realize how much risk they have in their portfolio, particularly in a 401k.
Right.
Because they signed up once, the Fidelity guy came over, and or the IMCA girl came over, and they said, hey, here's, you know, I'm your person, here, let's sign you up, we're going to toss money away. Yep, exactly. And good for you that you did that. Good for you that you participate, that you're increasing your contributions, but it may have been 10 or 15 years since you've looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
And conceivably, if you were 10 or 15 years ago, 10 or 15 years younger, let's say 10 or 12 years ago, right after, maybe you got in right after the 2008 bubble burst, right? And you got in, and now you've been investing heavily in stocks, you've done really, really well. And then over that time, now your stock position is probably overweighted to your bond position. And so if you are in that sort of a position, then you might be having too much risk than you can take, right? So if you think about if your stocks are, if you're 100% stocks, you have $1 million saved for retirement. Good on you, right? We did really well. And then the market loses 20%, which I think it might.
Mm-hmm.
We're down 12.4% from the all-time highs right now, the market. So that's not that much farther to go to hit what's called technically a bear market.
Mm-hmm.
And with the coronavirus slowdown, with all the fear that's going on, with all the fear-based selling, I think that we might touch down 20%.
Mm.
So if you had $1 million, now you have, you're just about to retire, now you're down to $800,000. And if we're talking about a safe withdrawal rate, the general rule of thumb is 4%. So that's $32,000, generally speaking, that you can expect to take home. Now, if you had that portfolio invested just 50% bonds and 50% stocks instead of 100% stocks, then you would have gone down a significant amount less, right? Because bonds have gone up. So asset allocation built towards your risk tolerance makes a big difference. The other thing is, if you can hold on through the ups and downs, then you're going to end up being a lot better. If you have too many, you know, too many things. Okay, so we have a caller coming in, actually. Henry has a question for Taylor about a will or trust. Hello, Henry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is for Taylor, and it concerns wills and trusts. I may be as brief as I can. First thing that happened, we originally wrote our trust 7-10-90. And so that's quite a while ago. And then we went to a trust attorney in Portland, Oregon, where we lived at the time, and she restated it, and we went to the signing. And then we moved to Arizona, and we got an Arizona attorney, and I'll go dot, dot, dot. It was restated two more times, and then we've added, we just had we live in Washington now, in Vancouver, and we had a Vancouver attorney look things over, and the, I don't know what you call, I guess his assistant, made so many typographical errors, and my wife caught them all, but they charged us for the time that we used up on the telephone telling them about the typos. Really sloppy work. And then when we got in the signing, there was still mistakes, and they had to take the paperwork back out and fix it and bring it back. Anyway, my question is this. We've got these restatements along the way, and I've got them all there. And then we have the one that we just did, which really wasn't a restatement. It just sort of cleaned things up. And in the will, it says a citizen of Clark County and so on. Would you recommend that we take all those old ones that really have no bearing on anything except the one with the original date on it, and shred those? Or are those still valid to keep? Or should we just bite the bullet, come to someone like you, and restate the whole thing so that it's up to date and modern?
Excellent question, and I get this quite a bit because just like you, Henry, a lot of folks do move around. And one good thing about trusts is that you can restate them so long as you're alive and competent, just as you have, depending on the jurisdiction of, you know, what matters, where you live then. The annoying part about trust is that, at least it's my understanding, my practice, that you have to go and trace it all the way back to the very first one, because assets are usually titled based on the very first trust date.
Correct.
So there are some documents that aren't relevant anymore. I always recommend keeping at least electronic copies, but you don't necessarily want too many originals floating around, like powers of attorney or healthcare directives or things like that that might vary from state to state and are completely revoked and superseded and replaced. But I would keep every single thing related to your trust, every amendment you've made, every restatement you've made, and the originals of those. I would keep that all in the same place so that you can very clearly trace the full history each time it's been amended, each time it's been restated, in case there's any issues. It also shows if there was any question about your intentions or a change in your intentions from if something were to happen upon your death or incapacity, some issue comes up, like you didn't mean to do that or you forgot someone, but you've got three, and this is just something I see with my clients, let's say, and I'm not saying that you have done this, but if there was a child that was intentionally left out, has been intentionally left out for the last two decades in three restatements, it's not a mistake, right? That can help support that and those decisions. So I would say, generally speaking, always better to keep all originals, keep them where they can be found, but you want to make sure that it's really clear which one is the most recent and which one is the currently active document, because that's the one that you want to control upon your incapacity or your death.
Okay, and what you just said, we have already done.
Great.
They're all there, and the powers of attorney, both for health care and the durable power of attorney, covering business transactions, I guess, or whatever, those have all been updated and comply with the current laws of the state of Washington.
Excellent. Well, well done, Henry. I pat you on the back for taking care of your stuff, and I'm sorry that you had a negative experience with your attorney. I'm always happy to review things, but if you just did it and you feel comfortable with it, I don't want you to feel like you have to incur additional fees. Some attorneys just take different billing practices, and while everything reasonable is lawful, it still can leave a very bad taste in your mouth when you feel like they didn't that they were correcting their own mistakes and bill you for it. So I'm sorry that you've had that experience.
Well, thank you, and you have a good day, and appreciate the information.
All right, thanks, Henry. Have a good day.
Yeah, that was a good question. That's a really good question, especially, you know, I come across people a lot of times that haven't reviewed it. And before we go to break here, is there a rule of thumb, generally speaking, that you see in your practice when how long it's been since, you know, Henry has his trust, like you said, set up back in 1990? Obviously, he's had it re-looked at a couple of times, but when you move, so that's a new obvious one. Move to different states, obviously, you need to restate it or get things done. But just generally speaking, my wife and I have had a trust for 10 years. We've lived in the same state. How often should we be reviewing, generally speaking, that trust document?
My rule of thumb is 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
Just put it out there. That never happens.
Sure.
So, I mean, it never happens. That's the reality. And so as a planner, I have to expect that once I'm done with an estate plan, it's going to go collect dust for a good long time. But every 3 to 5 years is usually something is different. Your assets have changed. There's a lot of folks who don't understand maintaining assets in a trust. And so they unintentionally will have refinanced a house. A lot of title companies, a lot of bank officers don't understand that the implications of just putting it in your name versus in the name of your trust. So a lot of assets end up outside of the trust, even though your trust itself is fine. And then the law changes. And there's been some very interesting recent changes with the Secure Act, a lot of changes with the estate tax exemption amounts, federal and Oregon and Washington, since the 90s when a lot of trusts were first put into there. So really any substantial change in your life, but you don't know what you don't know. So yeah. Every 3 to 5 years, it doesn't hurt to check in. What I do with my clients is if you've been an estate planning client, we've done a whole plan for you. It's free of charge to call and say, should I update my documents?
Right.
And if they most of the time, a 15-minute phone call answers their questions and their documents will be flexible enough to address whatever the issues are. But if there is a change that needs to happen, then I can usually give an estimate of this is what we're looking at, or this is why you might want to come in, and this is what the cost might be. So always ask, if you're working with an estate planner, what if I have a follow-up question? Not necessarily a change, but
right.
What if I just need 10 minutes in 2 years
yeah.
to say, we moved, here's how the house is titled, is that okay?
Right.
So don't hesitate to ask for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to make sure that you're reaching out. And that's just another, I know that folks are going to be just tired of hearing me say it and hearing Kevin say it, hearing you say it. It behooves you to work with a professional when you're talking about your estate planning, when you're talking about your investment planning, when you're talking about your tax planning. A lot of folks are turned off by the cost of working with a professional. And I can speak for all of us that are on the show. We try to keep our, costs as low as possible for folks so that people aren't getting gouged. Like it sounds like Henry might have gotten a little gouged there. But it behooves you to work with somebody because it can cost you some money now, but generally speaking, it's going to save you a lot of money down the
road. Absolutely.
So we're going to take a break here. We will be back with more Investing Simplified. If, like Henry, you have a question for Taylor about your estate planning, or if you have a question about investment planning, about 401k planning, tax planning, we can do what Kevin and I do when you're not here, kind of give our best estimate or talk about what we know and then just refer you to his office.
Yeah.
But give us a call, 503-222-9700. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thank you for tuning in. As a reminder, you can catch replays of our show every week. We post them to the podcast networks, wherever you get your podcast, whether that be Apple Play, iTunes, Google, or I think it's not Apple Play, it's Google Play, iHeartRadio, iTunes, those different things like that. Also wanted to put it out there. It's kind of exciting news. Been teasing it for a while, but next week, the man, the myth, the legend, Chuck Price, will be back on the show. He's coming back for a check-in with Chuck. He and Kevin will be doing the show, so make sure you tune in. Make sure you give a call in at that point when he's here. I know a lot of people have missed him. I'm going out to the coast with some friends, and luckily for me, Chuck has agreed to step in and carry the torch for the show, so it's pretty great. I know people are really excited.
I'm sure he misses that.
I think he has not missed having to truck it down into downtown Portland. I know that for a fact, but I think he misses just the connecting and the communicating. Yeah. And I know, with being an election year and with all the market things, I think he's always got things to say. Yeah, exactly. So I know folks have been missing him, so make sure you tune in next week to hear from Chuck or on podcast. Now, we were talking a little bit about when to review your trust documents, how often to keep up on those. And I would imagine you've come across some things. We've worked together on a couple of cases where people have outdated stuff or just stuff has changed you don't even really think about. And it really makes a lot of sense just to check in, even if you don't have, an estate attorney that you work with, or you had a plan done back in 1999 and you haven't checked, it behooves you to connect with someone to even just make sure that nothing needs to be redone. But a lot of times we've had a couple of cases that we've worked together on where people just haven't, nothing big has changed necessarily, except for their assets have grown. They have a bunch of different moving parts. And now you got to make sure that that's all connected in there.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of times they, at least folks who, especially before like 2002, 2004, and before my time, there was a big, big wave of trust mills. And they got cracked down on quite a bit for unauthorized practice of law. But there were, especially in California, but all the way up the coast and pretty much all over the
Arizona,
country.
Arizona, I've heard a good amount too, yeah, because yeah. It's where a lot of people retire to.
Yes, yes. And so basically these notaries would show up and say, here's your documents. And it's just, not too far from a do-it-yourself will these days. But they would basically give you this giant notebook. And that giant notebook is going to have your name, that's basically find and replace, your children's names, if they got those right. And it's going to be almost too big to know what's there and what's missing. I mean, they are long. They are often more than 100 pages.
Oof.
And they have these different tabs, and they're really fancy looking, and they look very official. And then they have all these instructions on how to execute your own stuff. And they have instructions on how to fund your trust. And they'll have these multiple page instructions, and they'll have these lists, like, this is what I want to go to who. Mm-hmm. And I have yet to see one filled out.
Oh, goodness.
Right? Because almost every client said, oh, look, this is fancy and this is ready and I paid $1,000 for it. They must have done their job. They must have done what they knew that they were doing, must have known what they were doing. So I'm all done. I'm all set. I got it notarized. And it's really, really difficult now because people like to set it and forget it. I understand that. This isn't something that most people want to revisit on a regular basis, especially once you've invested in something and you've put some time in there and it's not an easy topic to think about. And so it's really difficult when you have these kind of trust packets, these big trust notebooks, for me to dive in and basically say, you know, that what is here doesn't make sense anymore.
Right.
Particularly with the tax laws that have changed, right?
Yeah.
With the federal exemption amount so high. A lot of attorneys refer to a classic AB trust.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that's what we've worked on a couple of times too with the AB trust. It's kind of like, you know, people are listening, you know, you don't want to, if they're like confused by the different trust terminology deals, but the idea is basically this is how we used to do things. You know, think about it in medical terminology. Doctors used to do this, but now mm-hmm. we've developed. So instead of having to do this sort of complex surgery with, you know, with all these different tools, and it's going to cost you a bunch of money. Now we can do physical therapy, and now we can do laparoscopic surgery rather than having to cut everybody open. Or,
things
have improved over the last, you know, 15 years, and especially with the SECURE Act, with the federal exemption limits, there's, you know, a lot of things are old.
Yeah, a lot of things are just, or just different, right? And so you set these expectations based on common knowledge. Well, that's changed, right? And strategies change. And what's significant in the estate tax world is how much higher the federal exemption amount is, and therefore how much risk you're really exposing yourself to on estate tax liability. So it used to be that estate taxes combined federal and Oregon, or combined federal and Washington, you're looking at somewhere north of 50%, right?
Yeah.
More than half of what you have upon your death is going to go to the government. That doesn't feel good to anybody. That's not the case anymore, right? And so if you're looking at the income tax versus the estate tax, often you want to pay the estate tax over the income tax, but there are also ways to split the baby and find a resolution that sometimes can't always have your cake and eat it too, but you also don't want to cut off your nose to spite your face just to keep going with all of these various
idioms. Yeah, yeah, you're good.
But it's the classic AB trust is not a legal term, but it basically means a mandatory division on the death of the first spouse. So there's a formula, and there's a couple different types of formulas on how you calculate what has to go. It's usually with a joint trust plan, which is very common in community property states. So California and Washington, primarily, there are joint trusts. It's similar laws in Oregon, but we have separate property, so it's not quite as common. That's another topic.
Yeah.
But the long and short of it is there's a mandatory distribution to the first spouse's irrevocable trust. That used to be just how you did it. You just knew that you didn't want anybody to mess it up. Well, here's the problem. First of all, most surviving spouses don't think they have to do anything.
Right.
Right? You were married. You were married for 50 years.
We held everything jointly.
We owned everything together.
You know, I have clients that say that. If one specifically says, everything goes to my wife. Okay.
that's fine. But legally speaking, and we'll get there. But with an AB trust, a classic AB trust, that's kind of true, but there are things that you have to do. You mm-hmm. have to fund that trust or you're not in compliance with the trust. And it's hard to redo that and say the surviving right. spouse lives for another 5, 10, 15, 20 years. It gets tricky. You know, how do you unring that bell when it should have been funded? How do you go back for valuation? How do you right. how do you prepare that? And that's when we have to get Kevin or someone yeah. like that involved and say, what
and
can we rely on?
Everything you're saying, it just I feel like I'm at the mechanic right now. You know, I'm hearing cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching,
yeah.
right? Which
oh,
is just because
yeah.
as we have to go back and get valuation, and halfway as we have to do this, and as we have to do that. And and even when you're working with professionals that try to keep costs down, if you're spending out, if
right.
if your CPA, if your estate attorney are having to both
right.
spend hours and hours finding all this stuff to
right.
discovering all the dragging everything up because you have this old, outdated plan,
right?
Then it's like we said, then you're going to cost yourself a lot more
absolutely
later on. It's
absolutely.
Like not maintaining your car, right?
I mean, right, exactly. And I think that's a really good analogy. And at the end of the day, maintenance costs a lot less than repairs.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to, sometimes that information doesn't exist. Right. It just simply doesn't exist anymore. And so then what exposure do you have? And it's tough because this almost always comes as a shock.
Right.
Right. And often it's not until the death of the surviving spouse when a lot of that information is just simply gone. So these days, there are times where that AB trust, that mandatory distribution mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. appropriate. Like there's a number of cases where I do make that recommendation, but there are a lot more flexible options too, where you have some choices, where you're not going to put your client in a situation, and that's something I talk pretty openly about my clients. Sometimes it's just my judgment call.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
saying not on what they choose, but on, are you somebody who's very detail oriented? Are you somebody who's going to be meeting with me on an annual basis? Is that something that's valuable to you? On the death of your spouse, will I be one of the first phone yeah. calls just to say, I want to make sure I've got this done right? There's a lot of folks out there who are that way, where they are very detail oriented. But then there's a number of folks out there who say, I don't even know what I have.
Yeah.
Right. And we need to plan accordingly. Mm-hmm. We're not going to set you up for failure.
Right.
So there's a lot more to think about these days, particularly with an outdated trust, and make sure that it fits what you want so that you're not unintentionally not doing what your trust says you're supposed to do, because rightly so, your stuff is your own and you feel like if you're married, it's you and your spouses. And
right. Well, although if it's, me and mine, what's hers is hers and what's mine is hers. That's the phrase that she uses. But yeah.
Right. Right. So yeah, it gets, it's worth a review. It's absolutely worth a review.
Yeah. Well, and if you don't know where everything is, then you got to track that. That's something I've come across, and I don't know if you can speak to that and seeing that before when people have lists, so that's mm-hmm. another question that, this is not a legal document, but something I was actually was listening to another financial podcast mm-hmm. that, from on the East Coast, and they were talking about it's, beneficiary designations, which is huge, right?
Right.
Making sure
huge.
That your beneficiary designations match up with what you want, especially if you've had if you've been divorced, if you have a new spouse,
mm-hmm.
if you have a beneficiary that's your old spouse and your ex-spouse, and now you pass away and your new spouse, and a lot of times it gets litigious, right? They go and sue, and I don't know about you, but I've never seen where the new spouse wins.
It's a contract. Old spouse gets it.
Right?
There's only been some very interesting cases I've been involved in where the end result was what was fair, and that was only really out of the goodness of the hearts of others.
Right.
We're not out of any legal. We knew going into it, and that was all over our time. Legally, there's no right to it, and that's really, really hard to swallow.
Right. So make sure that's, when you're reviewing that stuff, make sure you review your beneficiaries on your mm-hmm. life insurance. But a lot of times, your spouse, if you're the spouse that handles most of the money, if you're the spouse that's done most of the planning, and I know that, we always try to make sure we're meeting with both
right.
Both spouses if you're married, just because we want everybody to be connected and everybody to have, somebody they can call. But hypothetically, you do have a lot of families where one spouse is handling most of that
right.
stuff. And if you don't have a list of where all these things are,
right,
then your spouse doesn't know where any of that is, right? So, hey, I've got this life insurance policy, I've got this, I've got that, I've got that, all these other things. And if my wife doesn't know where all those are, if something happens mm-hmm. to me,
just the reality
kind of
how
SOL.
You find it. And one thing I will also plug here is that think back to every single job you've ever had.
Yeah.
talking the early 20s volunteer firefighter stuff. Like, think about it, because there's a lot, particularly in our public officers, where their department paid for free for a life insurance policy. And I've had a number of clients whose parents are still named, right? Parents long gone, married kids, but the parents are the beneficiary. And now we're going through a full probate process because we don't even know how much it is.
Right.
Right. You can't get that information. So think about every single job. Go through that. It's worth it. It's painful. Yeah. I understand that.
It's right. Worth, yeah. It's like pulling teeth. Yeah. But you want to find all that stuff out. If you want to have a complimentary review of your beneficiary situation, you want to help have somebody to go over that, give my office a call, 503-253-3000. We'll sit down with you, review all that stuff, make sure that it all matches up. And then I'll tell you what we do is then we'll verify with your estate planning attorney that those are set up the right way. But we can go through and find all that stuff, make that list, give my office a call and come sit down. We'll do that.
Hopefully consolidate as appropriate, which makes it much easier on everybody.
If you don't have 15 or 20 different things left behind, it's usually pretty good. So we're going to take another break here. We're going to come back with the Cover Your Assets segment with Taylor Cattell. We're going to continue talking about, you know, some tricks, some different things that we've seen in our practices of what people have done. But if you have a question on your own situation, something that's been keeping you up at night, 503-222-9700. You can also visit investingsimplifiedradio.com. You can ask that question via the text machine right there. I hope that not everybody's just, you know, holding themselves away with the coronavirus right now, but we are here to answer your questions. So give us a call, 503-222-9700. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
It's time to learn to cover your assets with Taylor Cattell of KG Law Group, online at kglawgroup.com. Have a legal question? Call in now at 503-417-9595. Now, here's Taylor Cattell.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Taylor Cattell with KG Law Group. I am an estate planning, trust, and probate administration attorney, and I wanted to talk a little bit today about something I'm seeing that really goes underutilized here in Oregon, and that's Oregon's natural resources tax credit on the estate side. I know that's a really sexy sounding term.
Yeah, I mean, that's natural resources.
I know, it's really, but I don't think folks understand the availability of this natural resources tax credit. And what it essentially says is that if you have timber or farmland, forest designated forest land, or farm use property, if it qualifies as a natural resource, and it's been a natural resource for a while, and you're going to keep it as a natural resource for a while, and it's going to go to a family member for at least 5 years to continue to be used for that purpose, then you get, it's not a dollar for dollar reduction, it's a more complex proportionate calculus basically on what reduction you get. But if you're looking at some numbers, you can more or less cut your estate tax liability in half.
Wow.
It's significant. Now, there are parameters. Your estate has to be under $15 million. It's really hard to meet right now for a lot of folks.
My estate's certainly well over $15 million. Nobody does,
but the natural resource property has to be more than 50%. Your estate. So it's not just, hey, I've got a little parcel over there that I cut for timber occasionally. It's this is, you know, 50% or more of our assets are invested. Now, I've got a lot of clients who come to me without knowing about this. Mm-hmm. And particularly when they're looking at retirement, you know, Christmas tree farming and
that's big around here.
Dairy farmers.
Sure.
That's hard work. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. That's really hard work. And a lot of them are looking at, you know, what does my retirement mean? It means I don't want to work that hard anymore.
Right.
Right? I don't want to necessarily keep this. So how about let's talk about me giving it to my kids now, right? Or let's talk about me selling it because the kids don't necessarily want to do it.
Yeah. That comes across a lot. You get a lot of business folks who've built up their business, you know, over time, and now they're looking to pass it on to their kids, and maybe their kids are, you know, millennials. I say that tongue in cheek because we are technically millennials, but you get those folks that don't want to work hard in that, or maybe they're doing something completely different, right?
It is a different industry than it was when it was started, right? So it's tough. It's really tough, and I acknowledge that. And taxes are not everything, right? At the end of the day, it's not. But the difficult part, particularly about this natural resource property, is the lack of liquidity.
Yeah, it's hard to find a buyer, right? I mean, you got to find somebody that's willing to put up, especially if it's a $2 million property.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just those people aren't just walking around,
right? And then do you have to force the sale of it within the 9 months before the estate taxes are due because you don't have cash somewhere else to pay those estate taxes?
Right.
So it's really the values can be very high. Valuation is tricky in and of itself, but then estate taxes have to be paid. You know, 9 months after date of death, and even though you can have a 6-month extension on filing it, you still have to do an estimated payment. So you've got to have some idea of what's out there. Estate taxes are significant, not just in how much, but how do you pay them, right? And if you're going to get pennies on the dollar for an asset because you're so desperate to sell it, that's not really passing on the estate value that you
built,
think you,
that you
will.
Well,
exactly.
That you saved up, right? I mean, you worked really hard your whole life to get this farm property, to get this, you know, this Christmas tree farm. I like that one. So this Christmas tree farm that you've built up, and it's a going concern. Right. It's a great business model. It just, your kids don't want to take it over.
Right. Or you have another thing that happens is you have one that does.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
but you have multiple kids.
Sure.
So what's fair?
Yeah.
Right. Do you want all of your kids? You know, if your idea is that equal is fair, then let's say you've got a $6 million estate and 3 kids. Right. But your farm property or your timber, your Christmas tree farm and all the parcels you've got there is 4 million of it.
Right.
Well, how does that work? Right.
Yeah.
And so it's tricky because you do have to think of these things ahead of time and think about, well, where is, if that other 2 million is in, you know, retirement assets that you've been stockpiling for a while, that's not easy cash either.
Right.
And so there's some strategies that we can talk about that we can employ as far as there are qualified trusts that you can put together that are for the benefit of your children. And so if you wanted to basically have some other management for a period of time where you comply, right? And it's still owned technically, it's like gonna go to the benefit of your children, but that doesn't mean they're the ones out there planting the trees, right? There are some ways to get around that. And same, frankly, for you. You can have other managers. You can still own your property. We can come up with other ways to make that maybe a little bit more passive income. And it's tricky. It's not for everybody, because often it's your private residence also right there, right? There's a lot of complicating factors. It gets very specific, very individualized. But it's worth exploring as far as how, other than selling it, other than liquidating everything before you pass, still having the same value, right? Still having the same estate tax liability. If you can come up with a situation that you're comfortable with, keep increasing that asset, get the step up in basis if you have a low basis, get the full value, decrease your estate taxes. It's, you know, at the cost mainly of delay, right? It's going to be at least 5 years before the kids can sell that. Now, there are more flexible terms, too, as far as being able to sell the property and then buy similar property. So it's not just that they're completely landlocked into exactly what you were doing. They just have to meet these qualifications, be aware of them, and file with the state of Oregon saying, we haven't messed this up.
Sure. Right?
If they do take action like selling the property before the 5 years, not reinvesting it in qualified property, then they basically have to pay the estate tax that would have been due.
Okay.
So there's a pretty high consequence.
Yeah.
it's not a kind of situation where you just want to put it in your plan, not talk to your kids, not explain it, or not have a statement of intent in your plan specifically that says, this is why I'm doing it. CPA, estate planning attorney who's helping to administer, red flag here. Use this if you can. Kids, use this if you can. This is my intent. This is what I want. And I've set it up to try to help. So that's it's just been interesting to hear how complex these situations can become. But that when you start to calculate the numbers and the savings, it starts to look worth it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, half the estate, you know, like to be able to cut carve half of that out, just in, you know, that in itself. I see dollar signs the other way. We were just talking about cha-ching the
absolutely.
And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so that's the Oregon Natural Resources Credit.
Yes. And you can, if you were to look that up, there's some folks have said, well, how can I read more about it?
I actually
find that the filing instructions, I know this is really exciting, but if you were to Google that and get from the Oregon Department of Revenue, the actual filing instructions for that, it's about 2 pages. And it summarizes in relatively plain English what you can do, what the parameters are, what the requirements are, what the penalties are. And that's been the best resource without diving into the code itself, that I have found that to be the best resource for folks to understand themselves. This is what we're doing. And it's even got some of the calculation language in there. So it's, you don't necessarily need it. It's helpful to have the context of a CPA or a probate attorney to do some of those calculations. But you could do some rough calculations on your own based on your own valuation of the assets and say, if I were to look at this, I mean, I was looking at some clients who have their estate is roughly 12, 10 of which is farm use.
Sure. Okay.
And their estate tax liabilities are very, very broad numbers based on a lot of different factors, but was north of $1 million. And it would have cut it down to about 500,000. So literally cut it in half.
Cut the and that's so folks are listening, they're not, because there's a lot of numbers.
Yeah.
The liability, that's the $1 million their estate would owe in taxes, not the taxable estate.
Correct.
That's the actual amount of money that their estate was going
to
owe.
They would have had to come up with $1 million in cash if we didn't put the provisions in their estate plan, and they don't have that.
Right. Well, and even if that $2 million outside, just you said a $10 million farm use, $12 million total estate, even if that $2 million, let's say that was in, so not even your example, but generally speaking, that's in an IRA.
Right.
So that $2 million, we've got to pull $1 million out of that $2 million to pay the estate tax.
Yeah.
We're going to lose about 50% of that to income tax because it's in an IRA,
right?
So we got to put, so we basically have to would use that entire $2 million, rough math, in the IRA to pay the $1 million estate tax,
right?
So now we've just gone from originally owing the government $1 million, now we owe them $2 million instead of being able to just owe them $500,000,
right?
You know, it makes a lot of sense to
to
cut the guy. You know, I mean, we're in the business of paying, you know, we pay taxes that we are, I'll pay my fair share, but I don't want to be, you know, because I didn't know about something like this, because I didn't work with somebody to get it set up. I don't want to pay my share plus somebody else's share, especially if your kids are banking on this inheritance that you're leaving them, and you've been banking on it too. You've stashed all your money into this farm use property because thinking that, hey, they're going to be able to take it over.
Right. And it's not quite that ancient experiment of if you give a toddler one marshmallow now or two marshmallows in 5 minutes. It's not quite the same, because it's really like, do you want half of a marshmallow now, or do you want, you know, 10 marshmallows if right, exactly. So it's really it really is that pre-planning, where some of this you can do retroactively, right? Yeah. if the estate plan is just all to my kids, and, you know, kids, you're listening and saying, ooh, that's a farm.
Yeah.
Right? Then maybe we can still utilize that. But if you're in what I see more often, which is multiple kids and either none or only one are heavily involved and trusted, and your estate plan says everything goes equally to the three of them.
Right.
Now you're talking about really corralling a lot of different values and people together at a difficult time anyway, to try to figure out what's the long-term strategy. And a lot of folks, it's just, this is all new and pretty complex information. So how do you spoon feed it ahead of time, right? How do you set it up so that your kids are set up for success?
Yeah, so you don't have to herd cats later.
Yes.
You get to, you know, you can, like you said, corral them because you're getting everybody together and, yeah, you know, it can be really difficult. So if you have a question about that, if that applies to you or your situation, give Taylor's office a call at...
Yeah, 503-878-8948. And we'd be happy to talk through what's specific to your situation, what you've got going on, and whether something like this might be helpful to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Or if you know somebody, if it's your parents that have... Mm-hmm. You know, a farmer's property or Christmas tree farm, and maybe they've been talking about, they've said, hey, you get the farm when we pass away, but they may not have considered this, and you know, because a lot of people don't know about it. Like you said, it's underutilized, so we want to get that info out there. So we're going to take our last break here, and we're going to finish up talking a little bit more about the markets, a little bit more about how you can plan for what I think is coming in the markets. I'll tell you my sort of prediction for what's coming up in the next couple of weeks, which will invariably be wrong because, you know, nobody really knows.
So I still want to hear about it.
Right. But yeah, just kind of what we see happening and the way that we're managing client expectations towards that. But if you have a question as we close up here, 503-222-9700. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. As we finish up the show here, we got a few more minutes and talk a little bit about what we see coming in the markets. We also have a caller on the line. So Gordon has a question for you, Taylor. Hello, Gordon.
Anyway, I'll make it short because I want to hear what you're going to say about the future, too. But anyway, my question is this. Does a bankruptcy block what oversees what? The bankruptcy or the statute of limitations? Because can people, if somebody uses a bankruptcy to block something, does that oversee the statute of limitations?
You know, I don't practice in bankruptcy. My understanding, so I'll just caveat
It isn't a bankruptcy. I just use that as an example. It's a business thing, though. But which would oversee what? Do you know that part?
Well, both accomplish the same goal, so I don't know if one trumps the other or has to trump the other.
Well, doesn't somebody have... One has to do the other, though. I mean, one or the other. I mean, it can't... In law, it can't be just nothing, right?
Well, I think if you think of it more practically, from my understanding, as far as what's the goal, it's to block a creditor from doing something, right? To say that you don't have to pay them. And if that is a creditor who's going after you and the statute of limitations has passed, they can still...
No, it hasn't passed.
So if it hasn't passed yet, then that's not a defense. And bankruptcy could still say, if that was discharged in bankruptcy, then I don't have to pay you. And if the statute of limitations has passed and somebody sues you for it, then that's a defense. So you can basically respond and say, I don't have to pay you because you're too late.
Well, no, I understand if it's passed, but it hasn't.
Right.
I'm actually involved in a third party in this thing. But anyway, okay.
I hope that's helpful. I know. Every situation is really specific.
Heads or tails, and we really don't know then.
Yeah, I would definitely get an attorney involved, whether it's you or, you know, sounds like somebody else who's dealing with something like that. But anytime you've got bankruptcy involved, there's a lot of specifics with creditors' rights and how exactly that bankruptcy was structured. And statute of limitations have variable dates on what exactly that claim might be and how you use that as a defense. So, in line with everything else we're talking about, it's going to cost you less up front to figure it out now.
I just want to ask, who sets the statute of limitations on things? Is it the, like in the city of Portland, it would be the council or the Senate, the Oregon State government, when they meet? Is that who does it?
It's all done by statute, and statutes are created by the Oregon State Legislature. So that's okay. Ultimately the body that created that rule.
I'm just curious about it. Okay, thank you very much. I'll look forward to hearing the future next.
Good questions. Thanks, Gordon.
Now I feel like he's set me up for, you know, now it's got to be a real big thing, right? You know, he kept it short so I could talk about the future. I just, you know, wanted to talk a little bit about what I see from the, you know, the market going forward. I got questions. I do get questions that from folks that say, Bo, when should I sell?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the market goes down.
I was actually going to ask you that too, just in our conversation, because a lot of people like myself are going, well, should you get out of the wave?
Right. And I would say, I would say, and it's my opinion, right? So just take that with everything I say with a grain of salt. That caveat is, it's not about when you should sell now. It's about when you should buy.
Mm.
If we were talking about when you should sell, you should have sold on February 20th.
Right.
But I was not selling on February 20th necessarily. Most of our portfolios, we've gone risk off.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of that, we're not taking extra risk right now. We're still kind of waiting to see when the market, you know, continues, when the fundamentals, you know, kind of change. The fundamental marketplace, the economy is still strong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other than what we see is maybe a potential slowdown coming. I think a lot of the estimates that I see are that we're going to have zero or very little GDP growth in the next couple of quarters, just because everything sort of trickles. But the way the market works is it's very forward looking, right? So the market has priced in with this recent pullback, which is normal. That's the other thing to think about. Pullbacks like we've had are normal. You know, it went fast and it felt really fast because it went, you know, over a week's period. But the Dow is actually positive from the previous Friday with the super negative week till this last Friday, not a lot, like 1%, but you know, this sort of bouncing around is these big giant swings, these big volume of trades that are happening in the market. It gets very technical, but those are traders and those are algorithms and computers that are selling based on those items. But the thing is, I think there's more pain in the market to come in the next couple of weeks or months. I think we're going to do a lot of this like flip-floppity stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a long-term investor, if you're dollar cost averaging into your 401k or into your IRA, this is beautiful because you're getting to buy on sale, right? So you're getting to buy on sale if you're buying high quality stuff that you want to own.
Mm-hmm.
If you're buying, you know, well-diversified, if you have a well-diversified portfolio and you're on the conservative side, you may only, you know, the market's down 9% for the year so far. I mean, that's, I don't remember the number exactly as of yesterday, but something like that year to date, and you're down 3%. That's okay, right? You're expecting to have those market swings. You're not, the market just doesn't go up every year. I think that my prediction is, you know, my crystal ball prediction, as Chuck used to always call it, is that 11 months from now, we'll be touching all time highs again. Where I think we're going to have over the next few months, this flushing out of some, because I think it's a combination of things that caused this downturn in the market. One is that the market was overpriced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was expensive. It had been we'd had a long run up over, I mean, not really long if you think 2018, because it went down a lot in 2018, but we had this long run up, this secular bull market that's run for years and years and years. And so there was an overvaluation of some companies. I think that there's a combination of, it's an election year, which is always volatile, right? No matter who you think is going to be, you know, a lot of people said, well, because Bernie was the prohibitive favorite, you know, before Super Tuesday, and now Joe Biden's the favorite from on the Democratic side, right? It's the same as 4 years ago when, you know, when Donald Trump was then becoming the favorite, then it caused big fluctuations in the market, right? Because the market doesn't like change. The market likes stability. It likes forward-looking stability. So you add that in, and then there's the coronavirus portion, right? Which is a portion of what's caused the slowdown, and mostly, though, it's fear. Right. So a lot of people are afraid. They priced in what they think is going to happen. And I think we will have a global slowdown to a certain extent. And there will be countries that go into recession because of it, because we're so dependent on China for a lot of the supply chain. Right. It's things, container ships haven't been coming out of China. Container ships aren't docking, you know, just because people are afraid of stuff. So I think that there will be a slowdown over the next quarter, maybe two quarters. But then I think it's going to pick back up. So the idea is, when do you start putting risk back on the table fundamentally? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's right now, but I think it's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, again, if you're 10, 15, 20 years away, if you're 20 years away from retirement, you should be buying all you can right now, right? Because I don't think it's a meltdown like 2008, which there were categorical systemic problems. Right now, it's, again, it's a fear. But if you're buying when other people are fearful, that's generally speaking going to be the best time to buy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
So if you have questions about that, if you want to review your investment portfolio, your philosophy, CRs, and see how we have gotten clients that we're not as worried about it, even though we're taking retirement, mm-hmm. we have sustainable, count-onable retirement income because we have a plan. 503-253-3000. If you'd like to review your estate planning, they can call you at
KG Law Group, Taylor Cattell, 503-878-8948.
And we're very excited. We have opened our West Side office off of Northwest 26 and Bethany Boulevard. So give our office a call if you're on that side of town. You'd like to come see us. Taylor's happy to meet you over there. I'm happy to meet you over there. Thanks for listening today. God bless y'all.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000. You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.